Parliament Square was a riot of colour and action. Flames were leaping from Big Ben and Westminster Abbey. The trouble had spread down Millbank, and word had just reached those at the epicentre of the disturbance that the Tate Gallery had been fired. The news that billions of pounds worth of modern art was going up in smoke brought loud cheers from the crowd. As street-hardened proletarians, they understood the oppressive function of bourgeois culture. They were going to build a new world without art or any of the other elitist garbage that characterised the reigning society. It goes without saying that quick-thinking militants had wreaked similar destruction on the National Gallery, the ICA, and the numerous palaces and foreign embassies located in the area liberated by the insurgents. Terry found Joyce at the very centre of Parliament Square. She was in his arms as Big Ben crumbled and went crashing into the Thames. The comrades laughed manically as this symbol of imperial oppression was wiped from the face of London. To achieve freedom, they had to erase, demolish, and otherwise destroy the very architecture around which the bourgeoisie had engineered the domination of their class. The city would have to burn and burn and burn before this destructive frenzy reached an orgasmic resolution. Watching the Houses of Parliament reduced to a smouldering ruin made Terry and Joyce feel horny as hell. The almighty crash as the roof of Westminster Abbey caved in added urgency to their lust. A church has stood on the site since the 7th century. In the 11th century, Edward the Confessor founded the present building. Henry III began a vast programme of restructuring in 1245, and this marked the founding of the Abbey as it was known until its demolition at the hands of the feisty proletarian mob. Cloisters and monastic buildings were added in the 14th century, the nave and aisle being rebuilt at around the same time. Then, in the 16th century, Henry VII built the Eastern Chapel, which was named after him. With the exceptions of Edward V and Edward VIII, every monarch since William the Conqueror had been crowned within the dusty confines of this architectural abortion. Many members of the aristocracy had been laid to rest within the building, and it was good to know their bones were getting a roasting. The destruction of this ancient monument marked the end of Britain's Christian experiment and a return to the country's traditional pagan values of polymorphous perversity. And if the royal family wanted to stick with the religion it had foisted upon an unwilling underclass, the entire Windsor clan could go and fuck the Pope. The masses had no use for overpaid sponges whose gene pool had been poisoned from years of inbreeding. Hand in hand, Terry and Joyce ran through Victoria Tower Gardens. On reaching the edge of the Thames, they leant over the stone parapet and beneath them saw what they'd been hoping to find. Joyce jumped down into the rowing boat, then spread her arms to catch Terry as he clambered over the wall and lowered himself into her embrace. Terry's mouth met Joyce's lips and the girl from Seven thought heaven was in his kiss. She wondered whether the boot boy was going to suck the soul from her body. Gradually, she was lifting the veil of cynicism that had descended upon Blake, and the brand of hard loving he gave in return repaid her every effort to make him feel whole again. Joyce sincerely believed that before the two of them could settle down and raise a family, Terry had to resolve the frustrated desires of his youth. Personally, she'd never adhered to the anarchist ideology of overthrowing the state, but if that was what it took to make a man happy, then she was more than prepared to erase those parts of London which serviced the governmental machine. It was for this reason that she'd helped Jackie and Winston orchestrate the Westminster riot and sent Terry off to subvert fascist youth. The way the boot boy slid his hand under the waistband of her Levi's told Joyce she'd done a great deal to help discharge the tension while the psychological conflicts of Terry's teenage years remained unresolved. As a skinhead fingered a love button, Joyce cast off, letting the tidal flow carry them eastwards. Terry had two fingers inside the hippie's cunt as the boat drifted into the centre of the mighty Thames. "No," Joyce rasped as Terry slid down a bulk and began to lap at a hole. "I want to suck you off." The hippie hauled Blake to his feet and then got down on her knees. As she eased the boot boy's cock from his flies and the love muscle began to harden in her palm, storm clouds gathered over London. Joyce took the head of Blake's huge tool in her mouth while simultaneously working the base with her hand. She knew that for Terry, speech acted as a kind of body armour and therefore wasn't surprised when he began to recite, "I bites a cop's fiery flying roll." "Thus saith the Lord," Blake howled, as though the words had welled up from his bowels. "I inform you that I overturn, overturn, overturn." As Blake declaimed the anarchist classic, spots of rain began to fall on his cropped scalp. A chill wind took the warmth from the summer evening and churned the waters of the Thames. But Terry stood firm as the boat began to rock and Joyce worked his prick with her tongue. "Behold, I, the eternal God, the Lord of hosts, am coming to level to some purpose, to level with a witness, to level the hills with the valleys and to lay the mountains low." There was a low rumble of thunder and the storm began in earnest. The rain lashed against Blake as he screamed his message of defiance to the stars. The rainboat was tossed mercilessly on a swell which threatened to send its two occupants plunging into the deep water which raged around them. Joyce piled on the pressure and Terry gave himself up to terrible pleasures. For the day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon everyone who is proud and lofty, and upon everyone who is lifted up, and he shall be brought low. For a brief moment a flash of lightning illuminated the boot boy, who'd thrown back his head and raised his arms to the heavens. The cops on Westminster Bridge, who constituted the thin blue line protecting South London from the ravages of proletarian insurgents, grinned wickedly as they caught a glimpse of the girl working the skinhead's love muscle with her teeth and her tongue. In that day, a man shall cast his idols of silver and idols of gold to the bats and to the moles, for the Lord is now risen to shake terribly the earth. The unusual atmospheric conditions sent Terry's voice thundering across London, and it was heard by thousands of people. Many a woman trembled in fear, thinking the final day of judgment had stolen unnoticed upon them. Remember your forerunner, who is putting down the mighty from their feet and exalting them of low degree. Joyce worked Terry's cock frantically with her hand. I want you to come, she sobbed before putting the member back in her mouth. It was as if Blake's libido had hardened, and the words of fire and steel pouring from him had replaced liquid genetics as the issue sexual stimulation brought forth from his bulk. Ministers, fat parsons, vicars, lecturers and monarchs have been the chief instruments of all horrid abominations which cry for vengeance. Terry's back stiffened as Joyce swallowed his cock and the roaring water sent them hurtling under Blackfriars Bridge. The rain drummed against the two figures like machine gun bullets fired into a phalanx of troops. The very jaws of hell had opened up before them and chaos spewed forth. Blake was soaked to the skin and the wetness threatened to seep into the interior of his being. Only by concentrating all his energy on the words he was reciting could the skinhead find relief from the nausea that made his hands shake. He would not allow the liquid genetics that boiled inside his groin to be discharged from his throbbing love muscle. Such a deluge would obliterate the boundaries he'd so carefully erected around the muscular structure of his bulk. We should be drunk every day of the week and lie with whores in the marketplace and account these as better actions than taking the poor, abused, enslaved ploughman's money from him. The current raged around the tiny boat as it shot beneath Southwark Bridge like a bullet slicing through a stormtrooper's brain. Joyce continued to work the base of Terry's cock with her hand and its tip with her mouth. Blake's eyes radiated a brilliant blue as the liquid DNA boiled in his groin, but through sheer force of will, he prevented it exploding out into this world of illusion. Be no longer so horridly, hellishly, impudently, arrogantly wicked as to judge what is sin, what not, what evil and what not, what blasphemy and what not, for thou and all thy reverend divine so-called, who divine for tithes, hire and money, and serve the Lord Jesus Christ for their own bellies, are ignorant of this thing. How, rich men, for the miseries which are just now coming upon you. The rust of your silver is rising up in judgment against you, burning your flesh with fire. Joyce worked Terry's cock with an ever-growing frenzy as the boat sped through the turbulent water that coursed round London Bridge. Blake knew he couldn't hold on to his molten genetics very much longer. His voice was hoarse, and he screamed cops tracked, as if his very life depended upon his ability to complete the recitation. The dreadful day of judgment is stealing on thee within these few hours. As Terry screamed the words, Joyce could feel his cum spurting into her mouth. An orgasm surged through their twin bulks as a boat was swept beneath Tower Bridge by the raging waters of the Thames. And because thou art judged me, Terry hissed, I will judge thee with a witness. Expect it suddenly. The boot boy could feel the darkness welling up around him. He had no defence against the black cloud of unconsciousness. There were no longer any distinct boundaries to mark the limits of his being. Joyce caught Terry as he collapsed.